Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Hello, welcome back. Shalom Aleichem, and welcome to today's Daf Hayomi. Chulin Daf Yudal, we begin on top of the Mishnah. It says the Mishnah, Shechet B'Shabbos. If a fellow does Shechita on Shabbos, which of course is forbidden, it's one of the Lamites Avos Malach, is one of the 39 primary forms of work which are forbidden on Shabbos. Hashechet B'Shabbos, if he does the Shechita on Shabbos. Ubi Yom Kippurim, or on Yom Kippur, which of course again is forbidden. Aval Pishim is Chayiv B'Nafshi, even though he's not liable to death penalty. Right? If he was on Shabbos, he gets skila, stoning by the Bezdin, or if it's on Yom Kippur, there's kares, premature death. So even though there is such a severe consequence, nevertheless, that's all about, you know, his person, but what about the actual animal? And the shechita is like sheir, it's a successful shechita and could be eaten. So one doesn't affect the other. He committed an isser. He's liable. But the animal is kosher. Amrav Huna. However, Darash Chiba Rav, he taught us Mishmei in the name of Rav, the Rav. So Chiba, the son of Rav, quoted his father Rav, Asura ba'achila liyoyma. Although we said the animal is considered mutar, considered properly shechted, and is permissible, but on that day itself, on Shabbos itself, you can't eat it. Asura b'achila liyoyma. And the question is why? So now, there was a clarification added to this point. The Nozvin, Chavraya, the Chaverim, the Bnei Yeshiva suggested, they explained, they concluded Lomemar to say as follows. Rabbi Yehuda, this halacha is based on Rabbi Yehuda, who considers the basar to be asar that day. You can't eat this material on the day of the Shechita, although you could afterwards. Now, why? Which Rabbi Yehuda are we talking about? Based on what? What's the concept? What's the underlying point here? Hi, Rabbi Yehuda. Which Rabbi Yehuda are we talking about? Where do we find the Shechita? Amar Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Yehuda da Hachanahi. Rav learned this from Rabbi Yehuda's opinion regarding Hachana. It's forbidden to use on Shabbos something which wasn't prepared for this purpose, what we call mukta, right? It's not as we learned in Maseches Shabbos and in Mishnah. Mechatchen esadi luin fnei behema. Tanna Kamma holds, you can take these melons and cut them up as food for the animal. Vesanavelo fnei aklovim, or a dead animal died on Shabbos. In which case, at the entry point of Shabbos, when Shabbos arrives, it wasn't yet suitable for this purpose. It wasn't animal feed. It was a live animal. Nevertheless, this opinion holds. There's no isra of mukta. You can cut them up. You can prepare them for the animals. So the melons for the behema, and the nevela to the club, and to the dogs. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says, no. You're lacking preparation. It was mukta. It was set aside. It was designated for a different purpose. But Omer, he says like this, Rabbi Omer, loy hoisa nevela merav Shabbos, unless the animal was dead before Shabbos, in which case it was destined for this purpose. But otherwise, asura, you can't touch it on Shabbos. Lefi, why? She'eino min ha-mukhna, wasn't prepared for this purpose. It was designated for something else. Apparently, Rabbi Yehuda holds, kiven le'itkan, since the item, in this case the animal, was not prepared in advance of Shabbos, may asmol, from before Shabbos, asuru, it's forbidden, it's off limits on Shabbos, because it's called mukta, it's been designated for other purposes. Hachanam here as well, regarding the animal, and now Mishnah was shechted on Shabbos. Since it wasn't ready for consumption as Shabbos entered, right, kivin lo itkan mi asma, wasn't prepared, wasn't rendered food, edible food material, before Shabbos, asuru, therefore you can't eat it on Shabbos, on account of its mukta status. Amalei Abaye. So Abaye responded to this comparison, this connection between our Mishnah and the Mishnah and Shabbos. Midamei, could you compare the two things? Hasam. Yeah, in that case, where the animal died on Shabbos, Meikara Muchan La'adam. You're right, of course, it's mukta, because you're now diverting it to something totally different totally different purpose than what it was meant for initially. Because initially it was meant for human consumption. It was a live animal, kosher animal, meant for human consumption, if it would have been, you know, nishchat. Now that it died, it's now been sort of redirected for animal feed. And since at the onset of Shabbos it wasn't meant for this purpose, it's a totally new entity. And therefore you can't use it on Shabbos. It's muktzah. But over here now, Mishnah. It wasn't such a drastic change in designation. Actually, it's still on the same track. It was meant for human consumption and still is. Here on the behemoth that was shechted on Shabbos. Initially it was meant for an Adam to eat, and now too. So you're right, although at the onset of Shabbos it was still alive and practically you couldn't eat it, but it was still meant for this purpose. It was designated for this function. Therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree, perhaps. There's no problem, there's no muktzah here. You can eat it. So he responds, Rabbi Abba responds to Abaye, Misavris, are you working with the assumption, with the premise, Behema b'chaya, that an animal during its lifetime, l'achilo yimedes, is designated for eventual shechita and human consumption, in which case you're saying that it's pretty much consistent with what actually happened? No, Behema b'chaya, an animal during its lifetime, l'gadlo yimedes, it's meant primarily for generating offspring. In which case, now that it has been shechted on Shabbos, you have now redesignated it for something else, something different than its initial purpose. And since that initial labeling, that initial designation was present on the animal at the onset of Shabbos, so when Shabbos arrives, it was destined for something else. You can now redivert it on Shabbos and use it as muktzah. Sabai responds, no, Yochi, so according to you, that a behemoth during its lifetime is primarily meant for legadal velodes, to generate offspring, I have a question for you. What about on Yom Tov? Right, you can do shechita on Yom Tov. How? Behemoth le Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, an animal that was shechted on Yom Tov. Hecha shechtin, how can we shecht it? And how can we eat it? It's muktzah. Right? You can't even shecht it, because if you can't eat it, you're not allowed to shecht it, right? Shechting is only mutter l'tzarech eichel nefesh for human consumption. If it's also because of the mukta issue, because you're not redesignated, relabeling it on Yom Tov from an animal meant for offspring and turning it into human, you know, food material, that's mukta that you can't do on Yom Tov. Amalei Serb Abba responded, oh, you're right, you have a point. Apparently, every animal has a dual designation, a dual purpose. It's meant for consumption. That's one option. Or for generating offspring. You can go either way. Right? So how would we determine that? How is that sort of clarified? Based on what happens to the animal. So comes Yom Tov and you did Shechita. It's been now discovered, sort of retroactively, that was always meant for human consumption, because it has both potentials. And that takes away the muktzah problem. It was always potentially meant for this as well. So now it was nizbar, it was nizgal, it was verified, it was confirmed retroactively, it's meant for consumption, so there's a muktzah. But lo nishchata, but in a case where it wasn't shechted, such as now case, or at the onset of Shabbos, it was live and well. Apparently it's not meant for consumption because you can't do shechit on Shabbos. Apparently it's not meant for that. At least for the Shabbos, right? Now it's been confirmed retroactively that it's meant for offspring. So that's certainly a mukta issue. Again, on Yom Tov it's not so, because on Yom Tov you have the whole Yom Tov to do shechit. So even though at the onset of Yom Tov was still alive, but now that you shechted it on Yom Tov, it's been revealed to us that this animal was always meant for Shechita. Versus the our Mishnah, we did the Shechita on Shabbos, which is also, you can't do Shechita on Shabbos. So at the onset of Shabbos, certainly that wasn't the plan. So at this point, it's still assumed that the animal is still meant for offspring generation. until you determine otherwise, right? So you can't just relabel it on Shabbos; it's muktzah. Okay, so basically, what we're saying is that when we sort of divert something to a new destination, that's muktzah. If it wasn't meant for that purpose at the onset of the Shabbos, the onset of the Yom Tov, except by Yom Tov, you still have the option to do Shkita on Yom Tov, and at that point, if you have Bereira, you can confirm retroactively that it was meant for that purpose. Asks the Gemara, what do you mean? But it's Rabbi Yehuda speaking. V'halasli Rabbi the Breira. We don't find Rabbi Yehuda agreeing to the idea of Breira. You can't just sort of start a process and then later on confirm retroactively that in fact this was the purpose, this was the goal, this was the objective to begin with. And have it considered as though it happened way back when. Such as in this case, where you're trying to use today's event to indicate what it was meant for to begin with, at the onset of Yom Tov or Shabbos. He doesn't hold. He doesn't hold of the idea of Breira. Menolan, how do we know that in fact he disagrees with the concept of retroactive verification? Ilamim b'desanya. Is it from the Braisa, which has a fellow who buys? He buys wine ben akusim from the kusim, who we knew were not adherent to the halachas of trumais and masrais. So you buy it, have to make sure to take off your truma and masrais. Okay. Now he's running out of time. It's Erev Shabbos, so he doesn't have ample time to properly separate Omer. So he declares like this: Shnei lugin, two parts out of the hundred. So it's basically 2%. Shanias lahavish, which later on I'll separate. Later on, right now I am designating them. I'm labeling them as truma gedolah, harein truma, and I will separate it later with this retroactive formula. Later on, I will verify. I will reveal what I had in mind. Now I'm sort of leaving it sort of floating. To look in there as truma, to be determined later. To be identified later. It works. Harein to Trumos. That's his announcement. Asara Masarishan. 10 additional Lug is Masarishan. Tisha Masarishani. 9 is Masarishani. Mechal. And the Masarishani element he now transfers. The Kedushi transfers onto money. It's an easy thing to do. So he does that right away. Mechal. Vashesim Yad. And he could drink the wine. I'll leave over at the end. And identify that as the Truma, etc. So he's relying on the Breira concept, right, to sort of start a process now and to conclude it later retroactively. Divrei, who she does that, Rabbi Meir? However, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Apparently he doesn't hold the Breira. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yasi, Rabbi Shimon, all three of them, Eisrin, they forbid him from doing this process. The Gemara is assuming it's because Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold the Breira. Either you do it all the way or you don't do it. You can start now and sort of conclude it later retroactively. Says the Gemara, Amid Beis. No, it's unrelated. His opposition is based on a different concern. Hasam, Tani Taima, the reason for the opposing view is based on a different explanation. Amr Loi Rav Meir, the opposing opinions, responded to Rav Meir. Sure, Breira works, but you're banking on the fact that tomorrow we'll have wine left over, which will then be now used for truma. Yeah, tamayde, but wouldn't you agree, shema yibaka anoid, that perhaps if the noid, the container, cracks and falls apart and the wine disappears on you, and never gets to conclude the truma process or maser process, v'nimtza shoyse tevolum mafriel, it'll turn out that he drank tevol retroactively. Let's be concerned about an unsuccessful conclusion to this process. Sure, if he gets lucky and he concludes it properly, fine, but isn't there a chance that it won't happen? Amalan, the Kshay Bakas, he says, we'll worry about it when it happens. Meaning, I'm not concerned about that far-fetched, eventuality. Okay, so bottom line is, in concept, all agree that Breira works, barring any, concerns about splitting caskets. So where do we find that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with Breira, which is the premise of our question today? Ella Meditani Ayah, we found it in a different place. Where it seems that Rabbi Yehuda takes issue with the whole Breira process. The Tani Aye. Aye is the name of a Chacham, of a scholar. He presented an explanation on the Mishnah. There's a Mishnah, Maseches Erevin, which talks about a fellow living in a town who's expecting some distinguished visitor, a Chacham, who will come speak on Shabbos. And this resident of the town would like to set up a system, an Erev Tuchumen, which allows him to walk beyond the standard 2,000 Amo, which is the shear that one walks on Shabbos, but by establishing an Erev, putting, you know, some food at the end of that 2,000, that allows him to extend his walk another 2,000, because that becomes his place of residence. Okay? But Tony Ayi explained the Mishnah in based on the Mishnah in Erevin, and there was a brisa like this. So the brisa goes like, Tony Ayi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Adam Masna Al Shnei Dvarim Ke'echad. So, like this, he doesn't know which side, which direction the Chacham will be coming from. Okay, could be coming from the east, could be the Chacham will come from the west. He knows that the Chacham is arriving, he doesn't know from which direction. So the Mishnah says you're allowed to place two, a double Erev, one on either side of the city, and you could condition it. Say like this, look, if the I'll need the one to the east, that becomes my Erev. And vice versa, I need the one to the west, that becomes my Erev. You can do that. On top of that, listen to this next case. You can also say that if two Chachamim arrive, two scholars arrive, one to the east, one to the west, I'll decide. I have two options. I have two Erevs, one right direction, which allows me to go theoretically to either direction. And I'll decide tomorrow which rabbi I'm more attracted, which rabbi interests me more. You can do that. So in the first case, in both cases, he placed a double Erev, right? In the first case, it was more straightforward. There's one Chacham, one scholar arriving. I'm not sure which from which direction. So tomorrow I'll find out where he came, and that's the direction I want the Erev to... that Erev should be activated. In the second case, he's adding another layer to this arrangement. Even if two Chacham arrive, one from either side, I will decide, I'll pick a direction, pick a Chacham, and that Erev will work for me. But in the Braisa, Ayah presented a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Adam Masna Al Shnei Dvarim Ke'echad. You can't have this double option. I'll decide, I'll pick whichever scholar I want to go to, I'll take that Erev as my Erev. No, you can't do that. Only the first, more simple arrangement works. Ella, rather, Im Bo Chacham Mizrach, Erev Ole Mizrach. Just one scholar, one Chacham. And he's not sure where he's coming. Fine. So if he comes L'midrach to the east, my Erev will be activated to the east. L'mayr becomes from the west. Erev L'mayr, Erev will be activated to the west. V'ilu L'kan L'kan L'loy. However, you can't have that double option. Giving yourself the option of choosing which Chacham to go to. And the question is why? So the question was asked on Ayah's version of the halacha. Why? What's the difference? I mean, they both need to rely on a sort of form of Breira. It's unclear at this point, and on Shabbos it will be verified and confirmed. So what's the difference if you're verifying directions due to one Chacham arriving or due to the fact that two are arriving? Either way, it's not clear until tomorrow, and then it becomes verified retroactively, which Erev was activated at the onset of Shabbos, right? The question was, Maishna, what's the difference? The Kan L'Kan Loi, we don't allow both options. The Ein Breira, we can't use the Breira system. Well, tomorrow I'll decide what I meant today. So in the more simple case, you're also relying on Breira. Ultimately, you don't know yet from which direction the Chacham is arriving, which will only be verified later, confirmed on Shabbos, retroactively to Erev Shabbos, you know, Ben Hashmash, at the outset of Shabbos when the Erev has to be activated. Mizruch Amarev Nami, in the case of the East to West, there too, Is it east or west? You're relying on Breda, which we're saying is not an effective system. And the answer is like this. You don't need Breda. In the most simple case, you know what happened? He placed an Erev to the east, to the right. An Erev to the left of the city. Because he's not sure where the Chacham is coming from. Comes the next morning, he inquires as to which direction they are. Oh yeah, he came from the right. But he was there already at night. Ukvar bo Chacham. Chacham arrived at the onset of Shabbos. Practically, he was already there. You didn't know. So it's just a matter of finding out the facts, verifying the facts. But factually, on the ground, everything was in place. At Bein HaShemeshes, at the onset of Shabbos, at the twilight moment, when the Erev gets activated. So that's not relying on Breira. It's a complete process. The process of the Erev activation had been completed without your knowledge. You didn't know which Erev was implemented. You didn't know where the Chacham was, but Hashem knows. I mean, he was there, factually on the ground, he was there already. It's not like an incomplete system which has to be concluded later and applied retroactively. Such as in the case of two Chachamim, where you're sort of now going to decide on Shabbos which one you want to go listen to, which one you want to go greet, and you want that Erev to be. So that Erev is sort of a pending Erev until you make your decision. That relies on the Breira system, which Rabbi Yehuda doesn't agree to, according to this explanation, according to Ayah's version of Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. But that wouldn't be an issue with that more simple case. He placed a double Erev, conditional upon the Chacham arriving from either direction, and the Chacham arrived. It was one Chacham who arrived from this side. That Erev now gets activated, as per his instructions. Now, you didn't know? The fellow didn't know yet? Okay, so I'll find out tomorrow which Erev he has, starting last night. Okay, so according to this, Rabbi Yehuda does not hold a Breira. So back to the first question, how could you shecht an animal on Yom Tov? You can't say, well, it's now been confirmed that it was meant for food. Because if there are other uses to the animal, the animal is considered designated for velada, is for offspring. That's a primary function of the. So that's muktzah. Oh, apparently, we say that the animal is primarily meant for consumption, and therefore it's not muktzah. So then the question is, what's wrong with the case in our Mishnah as well? Shechita on Shabbos, fine, it's an Isser, it's a Malacha, but the animal should be mutar. There's no Mukta issue. Elam Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda de Kalim hi. The reason why Rav Yehuda does not allow consumption of an animal shechted on Shabbos, to be eaten on Shabbos, it's based on a different Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah regarding a kli, a utensil, that broke on Shabbos. And it's forbidden, it's usher to be used because of Mukta. Kalim the snan of a Mishnah Misach Shabbos called Kalim and Etolin b'Shabbos. All these Kalim that were permissible for Shabbos use, you can move them on Shabbos, but then they broke Shivrei and Etolin. So let's say something broke off the kli, its lid or something. You can handle it. You can move it around, provided it's still a functional entity. Bilvad, provided shiu eisen mei melacha, at this lid or whatever. This broken piece is still functional, can still be used for some function. So it's still considered a kli status. For instance, shivrei areva, you have a bowl used for kneading dough and, you know, broke apart. As long as the pieces are still functional for something, lechasis ben pichavist, used as a cover over a barrel. Shivrei zchuch is broken glass. Lechasis ben piapach, to be used to cover a little container. Rabbi Daimer, no, it's not enough. It has to still be able to function in a manner which is reminiscent of its initial function. Rabbi Daimer, Bavad provided, they can still function as per they were functioning until then. They have to serve a similar purpose. as they were doing till now. Shivir Areva, for instance, the broken bowl, litzuk l'seichen mikvah. They have to be functional enough that you can pour, you know, some liquidy soup or something into them, which is similar to what they were used for until now, to knead dough. Shivir Eschuch is the broken glass, litzuk l'seichen shemen, to be used for oil, to pour oil in them. Because otherwise, just because you use them for something else, that's a new use. It's like a new entity. And that would be considered muktzah. Main melachtin in, you can only use them if they're still serving a similar function as before. Main melachtin acheres loy, but to serve some sort of function which differs than their prior function, no, that doesn't work. Alma, apparently, kiven de loy iska me'es melach melacha, since it wasn't designated, wasn't meant for this new purpose. So yesterday, going into Shabbos, it wasn't meant for this. Asiri, they're off limits. You can't move them. They're muktzah. Hachanami, here as well by the Mishnah, we shechted on Shabbos. Since it wasn't meant for this, kibin lo iskei me'es, it wasn't meant for this. So although, as we said, it was meant for human consumption eventually, but practically you couldn't eat a live animal. So now that they shechted on Shabbos, it's a totally new entity, and it's asur. You can't eat it. We can't remove it. It's called noilad. It's a brand new entity, brand new function. Amar Abayi, Abayi responds to Rav Yosef, how could you compare the shechted animal to the broken utensil? Midami, how do you compare hasam by the broken kli? Sure, there's a drastic change here. Mikara kli v'ashta sheva kli. Earlier was a complete kli, now it's a broken kli. It's a completely new halinilus. That's like a new thing that was born, sort of created on Shabbos, and therefore va'aser. But here by the animal mikara uchlo v'asayv aichel de'ev aichel. Initially, it was meant for food, right? A live animal, as we said, was meant for shechita, and after the shechita, it's also food. So although then it was alive and now it's not, it's like a broken piece of food. It's like a slice off the loaf. It's not a new entity. It was food and is food. So even though it went through some drastic change, but it doesn't really redesignate it, doesn't really relabel it and reclassify it, it's still food. And Rabbi himself holds of this idea. We find that Rabbi himself supports this point of uchla de ifras, shapre dami, that a broken piece of food is still okay. It's not a new entity, even though it was reformed. Food is food. This none we find in Mishnah Masechta Shabbos. Ein zerich zapiris. Loitz ben mashkin. One is not allowed to squeeze fruit and to extract juice. It's a malacha of dash. It's like threshing. Let's say it's sitting around and there's juice trickling out without human intervention. Asur, you can't drink it because you might go ahead and actually squeeze them. No, it's in mutter. It depends what the fruit was designated for. It was meant for eating, not for juice production. Then you can consume the juice trickling out because you're not going to come to squeeze it. It's not meant for that. But if the fruit was initially set aside for juice production, then keep away. Hayetz ben Asr, so the juice that's trickling out on Shabbos is Asr because inadvertently you might go ahead and squeeze it to produce more. But what about a Muktzah? What about Noilad issues? I mean, you had a grapefruit and now you have grapefruit juice. Why is that not a Muktzah issue? The answer is Eichla de Ifras. Food is food. It was food, it is food. Right? It's food that it was extracted from another food. It still retains its food status. Even though it looks very different, it takes on a new form, doesn't matter. Food is food. Says the Gemara, no. La vitmar lo, but haven't we explained on this Mishnah? Amar vidam Shmuel. Moido hayo Rabbi Yudah l'chachamim b'sali zesim v'anavim. Rabbi Yudah agrees to the chachamim that if you have a basket of grapes, zesim, olives, or grapes, although it was meant for actual consumption, not for juice production, the juice that actually flows out on Shabbos is also, because most people produce oil from olives. for Hanukkah, for right, and most people use the grapes for winemaking. And therefore, even though he personally had that in mind, he was planning on eating them, but concerned about perhaps a person coming to actually squeeze this thing and turn them into, right, for allow him to drink the juice, he might squeeze it. Alma. So what do we see from here? Kivan del schita kaimi, yoivdaite. So what do we see? Since these fruit are meant for schita, are meant for squeezing, are meant for fruit, from juice production, yoivdaite. So even though he personally was preferring to eat them, but in the back of his mind, he has that, he's leaving that option open to squeeze them into juice. Hence, Rabbi Yehuda says, don't drink the juice, because he might come to squeeze the achanam here as well. And now, Mishnah, let me explain to you why an animal shechta on Shabbos is asr. For a different reason, kivan de l'shchita kaima, since an animal is meant for shchita. So even though he wasn't planning on doing it, I mean, on the way into Shabbos, it wasn't shechted. But the fact is, it's on his mind, right? The shechita is a strong option, and if he shechts it, he'll eat it. And therefore, there's a rabbinic concern that if we allow a person to eat a shechted an animal on Shabbos, he might go ahead and inadvertently shecht it, not realizing that. So we want to keep him far away from this type of option. And an animal shechted on Shabbos is asr. Ask the Gemara, hold it. You're inferring that Rabbi Yehuda holds of this type of gzera, right? Based on the fact that he forbids consumption of the fruit juices. No, midu utama l'rav. Let's just go back a moment. Let's step back to the beginning of our sugi. Who's the one who taught us that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can't eat the shechted animal on Shabbos? That's Rav. Actually, Ha'amar Rav, Rav himself tells us, actually, Rabbi Yehuda disagreed with the Chachamim, even regarding olives and grapes. He says the juice that flows out on Shabbos is mutar. Apparently, he doesn't hold of this concern that if you allow you to drink the juice, you're going to squeeze more. So why can't you eat the shechted animal on Shabbos as well? El Amar Rav Sheish Rav Idi. I'll explain to you why the Chachamim understood that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can't eat the shechted animal on Shabbos. I'll find you Rabbi Yehuda that they're referring to. Rabbi Yehuda the Neiros, it's a different Rabbi Yehuda, which discusses Neiros, that's the lamp in which you light a candle, you light the, right? The Sanya, Metatlin Ner Chadash. Avalay Ner Yash, Ner Avalay Ner Yash. So Rabbi Yehuda holds that a lamp that was never used on Shabbos, brand new, squeaky clean, you can move it on Shabbos, it's nothing wrong with it, there's no, right? You want to fill it with chocolate, sure. Avalay Yash, but not something which had been used, because then, It's dirty and unbecoming and, it's made out of cheres, it was earthenware, it's oily, keep away from it, it's mius, it's disgusting, right? So that's off-limits, it's mukta, the Rabbi Yehuda. So what do we see from here? The Rabbi Yehuda holds of mukta in this type of case, when it was sort of set aside. It wasn't going to be used on Shabbos for this purpose. Due to the fact that it's mos, that renders it muktzah, off limit. Same thing with an animal. Going into Shabbos, it was alive and well. He knows good and well you can't do shchita on Shabbos. So there's muktzah. Right? You can't eat it during its lifetime. It's evar benachai. So it's now off its mind. It's off limit. Muktzah means it's been set aside. Not meant for consumption on Shabbos. That makes it asra. That makes it muktzah. Eimor de Shabbos le Rabbi Yehuda. True. We've just heard that Rabbi Yehuda holds that this unclean cheres is muktzah because it's the muktzah machmas mius. It's muktzah on account of its mius, of its disgustingness, of its dirtiness. Muktzah machmas isur mishamas le. But who says in our case where there's no mius, nothing wrong with it, it's not dirty about it, nothing repulsive? It's just because you can't, you're not allowed to. Halachli, you're not allowed to shechta on Shabbos. Who says that makes something muktzah? And yeah, actually it does. It's not Rabbi Omer. We move to the next daf. Kol neira shemateches metal chutz v'neira shadik bo'is a Shabbos. So again, this is Rabbi speaking. Kol neira shemateches. Now we're talking about metal lamps, which don't have the mius factor. Right? They're not as repulsive, right? So you can actually move them on Shabbos. There's no muktzah issue, even though they have been used, right? Kol neros shematechas, even the used neros, metalton, you can move them around. Chutz, except an aner shadikubu beis Shabbos, an aner that was used, that was lit for that Shabbos. Rashi says there was a flame in it at the onset of Shabbos, that makes the whole entry mukta. It was designated for this purpose. Rashi says it's called mukta on account of Isra, because you can't put out the fire on Shabbos. It's supporting the flame, and it's called mukta machmas Isra. And now the whole day becomes off limits, because whatever status it achieved during Ben Hashmashas, that status stays throughout the Shabbos. So here we see Rabbi Yehuda himself applying mukta even to something which was off limits on account of the malacha involved, not just account of the repulsiveness. Says the Gemara, well, maybe it's different than the animal that was shechted on Shabbos. Maybe there it's different. He pushed it away. Yodayim with his hand, so to speak, meaning he lit the flame on this snare. So by doing so, he sort of pushed it away. He rejected it from Shabbos use. That makes a mukta. But in our story of the animal, he didn't push anything away. He didn't reject it. It was just by default, by circumstance. You know, it's just off limits, because you can't eat a live animal. So maybe that's not a severe. It's not a considered a rejection to the extent that it would make it mukta. So again, the question is, who says it's mukta? Why can't you just eat the animal that was shechted on Shabbos? Where's the Rabbi Yehuda who forbids it? Elam Rav Ashi, I found it. I found the prize. Rabbi Yehuda, you know which Rabbi Yehuda? The Mavashali. It's a Mishnah where Rabbi Yehuda speaks about a fellow who cooked on Shabbos, and it's Aser. There's a Gzera Derabbanan. We'll see later. So that people don't come to do Isurim. We'll get to that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Okay, so let's just recap the Isdaf. A person does Shechita on Shabbos or Yom Kippur, even though the Shechita technically is kosher, but even though he himself is committed a great Isser, but the Shechita is kosher. And even though the Shechita is kosher, says Rav, you can't eat it on that day. And the question was, why? Was it Hachana? Was it Breira issues? Was it Mukta? I was sort of going to have to finish it tomorrow. And it's based on a Mishnah. It speaks about a similar case where a person does a Melacha like cooking on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda says it cannot be eaten during that day of Shabbos. All the best to you and Hatzlacha.